And we're back with another episode of Awareness to Action Enneagram Podcast. My name is Creek, and I'm with my luminous co-host, Maria Jose Munita and Lee Fields. Mario is still refusing to come back onto the pod.
Not because him to do so.
Right.
No, just because we're doing such a great job. He's a little intimidated, is his exact words.
It's an interesting translation.
Talking about exact words.
Yes, there we go.
I'm afraid one of these, not jokes, but examples that he gives, I tried to use it or quote him, and I did a very poor job at doing it. I think it's a cultural difference.
Translation.
Yeah, right. Translation culturally and language-wise. And I said something about one's contradiction where they... restrained, they are trying to do like behave properly but then do other things, they indulge but in hiding. And I said something about a priest with a kid being caught with a kid, which was really wrong. It wasn't what he says. His typical example, it's not a lot better, but it's better.
It's not a lot better. Yeah.
It's different.
It's a minister.
Let's
not
hear
a priest.
It.
Yes, it's a minister. To me, it's kind of the same thing, but I know that it's not. Caught in a hotel room by the airport. It has to be by the airport.
Apparently.
With a couple of hookers and drugs.
A speedball. Specifically.
Yeah, well,
yeah. An eight ball.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's his example. And it's pretty extreme, but not as extreme as a priest with a kid. He's never endorsed or even made jokes about pedophilia and or any of that. So just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah, yeah. And then also, while we're in confession, I also... misquoted
with
the website. a monk. I misquoted the website for signing up for the Nashville subtypes workshop. So what I said was like Enneagram subtypes, and it's actually subtypesworkshop.com. So if there was something you signed up to at that web address, then unsign up and re-sign up at subtypesworkshop.com. And it's coming up. We are not too far away from a wonderful evening with Mario and Maria Jose and all the crew. So make sure to
a really cool group with what I think is the best approach to the subtypes. I won't be shy about saying that.
We have people coming from around the world to Nashville.
For sure. So, for sure. And it's been, we're doing the certification program right now, and Lee and I are hosting like a Marco Polo group. And it's just been, it's always fun to watch people's, we just had someone mention like the instinctual biases finally clicked for them. As far as how important it is to have that context when you're talking about your own type or trying to type someone else or just do any level of work, having those is just, it just clicked for them. And it's so fun to see. And I know I'm still just digging into strategies and instinctual biases, and all the other stuff is like, this is great. But I'm still over here trying to like really, really grasp the strategies and the subtypes and instinctual biases and whatnot. So anyways.
And how foundational those things are, right? How there's so much to work with at those basic levels and to understand the subtypes and instinctual biases earlier in the process is really, really helpful. But we have great stuff to talk about today, too.
Indeed.
Yes.
Lee, why don't you bring us in?
that was that. No.
Oh, okay.
No. I mean, just back to our conversation about the type strategies and our sort of neglected strategies and the dynamics between our connecting points on the Enneagram there. We had a great introduction to that last time with some conversation partway around the circle, but we don't want to leave out anybody on the, you know, left-hand side of the Enneagram. Far be it from us to take sides.
Wait, Maria, does the Enneagram symbol flip when you're in South America, when you're in the Southern Hemisphere? Oh, is that?
Of course.
Is that? Yeah, okay, all right.
Falls back an hour.
Yeah, the toilet goes the opposite direction too, yeah?
So does that mean that the path for inner work reverses? Yes. I don't know.
Oh, man. Come on. Well, we'll have lots to talk about in Nashville then.
Yeah.
We'll get all that straightened out and more.
Yes. All right, Maria Jose, let's get this train going on the tracks. We've been off it for a while. So
I think we finished with four.
We did. Last time. Thank goodness. Let's move on to striving to feel detached. Give us a quick summary of that and then the neglected strategy, all that jazz.
Yeah. So what we did last time was to first see, kind of take a look at the strategy at each point, then see how the neglected strategy for that point was something that we tend to distort, and therefore many times, not always, neglect using. But there's a part of us that wants to go that way anyway. So we have this contradiction. And there is an opportunity for growth in integrating that in a more adaptive way. So kind of changing our narrative so that instead of feeling less detached in this case by going to eight, that it's trying to feel powerful, I'll feel even more detached if I do so. So we'll look into that dynamic for the point from five to nine in this episode. So point five, striving to feel detached. I want to kind of put a distance, to have a buffer between me and the rest of the world in order to approach it. That's my strategy to deal with the world. What I try to do is kind of map out or model the world so that I understand it and I can effectively, in my own logic, approach it. But when I think about striving to feel powerful, it feels really like too big, like it will get out of control. I, almost for fun, I ask fives, how do you feel about striving to feel powerful? What do you think would happen if you let that out? And all of them say it's like it's going to be a mess. It's like exploding. It's like it feels like too much energy that I don't want to have inside or let out. But there's a part of them that kind of has that, that they want to make an impact, they want to influence, they want to move things in the direction that they think they should go. They want to feel powerful, but they avoid it. So that resistance creates this contradiction that it's reserved. So on the one hand, more reserved, I don't share, especially my feelings, versus hostility. So that desire to have an impact, to control things, and all of that comes out as hostility. And because they look at people, and you can combine that with the intellectual arrogance, but there's this almost anger that comes out in a way that it's kind of repressed. And when I'm working with fives, they say, oh, well, I don't even say anything. And why do people feel that way? And I ask them, so what are you thinking? And they're usually thinking things that are sort of aggressive, but repressed. And that's how kind of it comes across as hostile.
So how might a five integrate that strategy more adaptively?
It's always about changing the narrative and first looking at the distortion. So I will feel the initial belief is that I will feel less detached if I integrate or if I strive to feel powerful. Because I'll have to be kind of more involved. It's more hands-on. It's more expansive. But it's there anyway. So what you could say is that, for example, if I sometimes influence my environment, if I do certain things the way I would like them to be done, I will feel even more detached because I will not feel that hostility. I will not feel that anger because things are not the way I want them to be. Because one thing is to avoid that anger or that emotion altogether, but they are not effectively doing it. It's there anyway. So I'll be able to relax and get that out and do it. And then in the long term, feel even more detached and not carry that around as I do if I repress it.
So am I hearing, tell me if this language sort of covers what you're saying, that intentionally using that energy that the anger or frustration gives the five in their system to make an impact more intentionally on their environment, then sort of uses that fuel instead of having it in reserve, creating more frustration or hostility that's taking energy to manage.
Yes.
Internally.
Yes. Now, a five might not always resonate with that anger being there, but it is a feeling of, I would like things to be a particular way, and they're not. And so that means, I don't know, setting boundaries or moving things, which for an eight are pretty normal. But for a five, they might, as I said, repress that. So it could be felt as anger, but I would be cautious about that. And it's when I want things to be a particular way. And that has, there's a fuel there. That could be felt as anger, but could be something more subtle that they feel.
Maybe agitation.
Like there's it's more of an affect of like wanting to have an effect on the world, like agency, animation, that sort of thing. It may not always be expressed as anger or be felt or defined as anger.
I think that defined is important, Creek, because I think in all these dynamics that we're talking about, the words that we're using may or may not be the thing that somebody would identify with in their own narrative, right? That might take a little more work to get to, oh, so that's what's maybe underneath this feeling that I'm having, but I'm still having this pull, this sensation, this experience that has a conflicted sort of twist in it.
Yeah. And I think it's important to just kind of reiterate, and we've said this in other episodes, that the lines connected to your point or whoever you're coaching, right? Maria Jose, correct me if I'm wrong, but in y'all's experience, these are the biggest bang for your buck when it comes to growth. Of course, there's other great things about the other types that you can learn and all that other stuff, but this tends to be like start here and then things will flower into more and more areas. Correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've seen people saying, yeah, I'm trying to develop all nine strategies, but you know, that's a lot of work and not necessarily have so much of an impact. So working on your own strategy, on kind of expanding, making your narratives more flexible around that, but also around the two connecting points, it's the work of a lifetime.
Right.
Right. This is that the lines are start here. It's like just start here first and then watch where it goes.
Yeah.
Right. Great.
And maybe you don't need to go further, right? Like where will most of the, I'm going to use it, suffering. Where will most of the suffering start, right?
Mm. Yeah, and we're not covering this here, but these same three points, we have the core qualities and the accelerators that are associated with these three points, and that's a big part of the work as well.
Mm-hmm.
So
those are future episodes.
Yes. Well,
no, they're past.
No, they're past.
Oh, those are past, present, and future episodes. That's the conversation we'll
never
continue
wrong.
To have.
Yes. Marinoza, can you give us a quick example of what a five could be doing to help integrate their neglected strategy?
With practices, it's always something small. And I think that it's not like every time that you feel like you want things done in a particular way, just go and do it. It's not that. I would, if I were working with a five, I would try to find something that it's important enough for them to make this effort and see what is one thing that you would like to see happening that it's not happening now. And mm-hmm. what can you do to push that forward? You know, how could you take action? And when you're not, because if you are, then mm-hmm. that's fine. But because in their minds, it's like, okay, I have to lead that. And that brings, I have to use so much energy to push people and to get my voice heard and to convince people of doing something. Or it feels like a lot of effort. But if they're feeling not necessarily resentful, but frustrated because it's not going the way they would like it to go, it's a waste of energy anyway, and it's less productive.
Right.
So I'll feel in the long term more detached if I just go ahead and influence certain things that are really important to me. I'll choose one.
Mm-hmm. Let's move on to point six, striving to feel secure.
Striving to feel secure. So sixes look forward. They're very, quite future oriented, and they want to feel secure that every step they take, it's on kind of safe ground. Striving to feel peaceful gets distorted as if I strive to feel peaceful, it will go against feeling secure because I'll kind of relax. It's passive. It's not alert. Mm. So I want to avoid it. I don't want to feel that way because bad things may happen. Mm-hmm. And there's a part of me that wants to relax, that wants to rest. But I have this contradiction. But it's in me. So the contradiction is responsibility versus laziness. So how you see this happening in sixes is usually I'm doing all the things that I have to do. And in some cases, I'm going to wait and see if other people do this instead of me. Or I'm going to wait until the very last minute to do it. So I have to do this, but I'm not going to do it just yet because, yeah, I need to rest, but I have to do it. So it's hard for a six to really relax and rest because they feel lazy or they want to be a bit lazy or they arrive a little bit late, but they want to be responsible. It's hard for them to have both sides and enjoy the times when they're not doing something. So the way to integrate this is by rewriting the narrative. And if I have some peaceful moments, I'll be able to do what I have to do with more energy or better, or I'll have a clearer mind to do it. So it's not against, but it contributes to my striving to feel secure.
I'm shocked. Some of this sounds like reminiscent of one, of just wanting to be responsible, those sort of things. How would you differentiate those two?
So I think that one of the core beliefs, and I don't want to make this a list of core beliefs of every type, but sure, one of the core beliefs that would be different, and I'm curious about what you think, Lee, as a one, is that ones want to do the right thing, and sixes want to do what's expected of them. So it's one is trying to do something that feels objective, that it's the correct thing, and there's only one way, or that's what they believe. And sixes,
or there's one ultimately most right way.
Yes.
Right.
But sixes want to do what their responsibility is, and that has to do with things that either they think they should be doing or people expect them to do. It's more kind of, there's somebody out there who is expecting them to do that, but it's usually kind of people around them. Do you agree, Lee?
I do. And I would say from my own personal experience that security doesn't come into my thinking. I'm already pretty certain. And
too
I don't
certain.
Even think about that. Right. Too yeah. certain. Far too certain. Like, it would do me some good much of the time to think, I wonder if this is the right thing to do. Huh. That's an interesting Whoops. Think. But that's typically rear view mirror material for me of like, huh, if I took the time to reflect on that, better get busy doing something else.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So laziness is not, for the six, laziness is an issue because I'm not alert, busy worrying about or preparing. Laziness for a one could be not doing it in a good enough way.
Right. Sloppy.
Yes.
I'm wondering if, like, people observing six in action would not typically think, wow, there's some laziness going on, right? Like, they have a tendency to, like, is it their internal definition of the experience of relaxing? Naming that lazy. And so trying to avoid the feeling of rest or stillness. Could you say more about that narrative?
Yeah, so I think that another word that could define that is procrastination. It's postponing the duty more than laziness. Mm. Also, like, getting there late. It's like I'm stealing time from the time that I should be doing these duties, these things that I should be doing. I'm kind of, okay, I'll get there a bit late because I do all of these things, but I'll get there, not just, not as early as I should, but it's like stealing time from doing those things.
I think I'm still struggling to see how the stealing time relates back to striving to feel secure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it has to do with responsibility. So when sixes fulfill their responsibilities, they feel secure.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the story that I have in my mind. If I do what is expected of me, I'll be safe. People will understand that I'm fulfilling what's expected of me, my role. Things are going to be okay if I do what I should be doing. So it has to do with responsibility. So if I don't do that, I might feel unsafe. If I relax, if I don't anticipate, if I don't prepare, if I don't do what is expected of me, and that's kind of the laziness that I distort, the way in which I distort this peaceful.
And I imagine it is the expectation of others, but also the expectations that I'm putting on myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or the story I have about the implications of doing it or not. Mm. Right.
Yeah.
The belief I have that if I don't do the responsible thing, I won't be secure because I won't have fulfilled that agreement or obligation or mm-hmm. performed yeah. my responsibility, you know, then that's yeah. why the bad thing happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's what you're saying. It's interesting because for example, my daughter is 6 and when she was at school and I probably at university now as well, when she's in class, she feels that it's her duty to raise her hand and answer the questions of the teachers. And many times it's so that the teacher doesn't feel bad because nobody's answering. So it's what drives them sometimes.
Mm. So, Rose, what's a practical example of something a 6 could do that would be working on their neglecting strategy?
Go to sleep earlier. You know, it might sound like a very simple, easy thing to do, but yeah. when you have something that you need to prepare for a 6, kind of staying up and having all these chat inside, preparing, what if I do this, if I do that, and understanding that my brain is going to think a lot better tomorrow if I rest. And, you know, it's interesting because I've read a lot about how the brain works. And one of the things the brain does is that you give the brain, your brain a task. And you don't need to be thinking about it all the time. The brain is thinking about it anyway. So, and that's why we have all these insights and good ideas when we're not thinking about it. It's because the brain is still working on it. So think about, okay, I have something important tomorrow. I'll go to sleep. I'll give my brain the task, and my brain is going to be a lot sharper tomorrow. I'll feel even more secure. Now, for a 6, it might be very counterintuitive. So it could be something smaller or like take a nap because they do it anyway. The thing is that they don't enjoy it mm-hmm. as much as they could. Mm-hmm. So it's like expanding mm-hmm. the time that I allow myself to rest by really resting and saying, okay, I'm not going to do it just now. I'm going to do it, I don't know, an hour before the deadline. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to rest now yeah. because I'll be able to think better.
To your point with like how the brain works, there's been studies and the protocol is something like, it's like every 20 minutes taking a 5-minute break or something along those lines. I'd have to get the exact numbers, but that then your brain actually encodes the information that you're trying to learn. So it's like going from stimulation to no stimulation gives your brain a chance to catch up and to encode the information so that you can actually learn it better. Because that's what it's doing. Like when I'm trying to learn a bunch of songs right now for a gig this weekend, and I'm like, I know that I could learn all the songs right before practice. Like I can do that, but it's not going to be inside integrated into my bones. I have to sleep after, like, I have to have a couple nights sleep in order for them to feel like I actually know the songs. And it's not just repetition. It's space between the practices that actually give me the result that I'm looking for.
To integrate them.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Right.
Great. All right, let's move on to point 7. Striving to feel excited. Didn't even do that on purpose. It just kind of happened.
Not. It's so natural. No. So point 7, sevens want to feel excited. And that means they want to feel free, have all opportunities or several opportunities available. They're usually kind of engaging. They interact with people. Of course, it depends on the subtype, but the neglected strategy of trying to feel detached feels like I'm going to miss out on something. It's like being mm-hmm. alone, a bit isolated, or I'm going to miss opportunities of excitement. So I try to avoid it. However, if you've interacted with 5s, you know that sometimes they just go away and want to spend time alone. They need a time to kind of recharge and not feel like they need to energize the people around them. So they have these contradiction that it's the enthusiasm versus withholding. They're in the middle of a party and they're wishing that they would go back to their rooms. I've seen sevens tell me, yeah, every so often I need to just go up the mountains for a couple of days on my own. And when they're usually, because they're not always the life of a party, but when they're usually energized and engaging and all of that, it's weird to see them want to do that. And sometimes they cannot even explain it. I remember I was once at the beginning of my Enneagram journey talking with a seven who said, yeah, I'm really integrated because I like to be in my room and read books. She was just being a seven, you know? Yeah. Sevens enjoy their time alone. And I think she was a preserving seven, so even more so. They're more concerned about the way in which they use their energy. But that contradiction doesn't allow them to live that part of them more naturally. Kind of explain it to themselves and enjoy it as much.
They're also, like in the six we were talking about, they're going to do it anyway. But some of the benefit is sort of squandered by the rush of trying to squeak it in or something like that. Like the seven, it sounds like what you're saying, they might pull away, but then sort of fritter that time, not really recharging or not really.
Yeah, or it's like they go out, they will go away and hide, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Disappear.
Yeah.
Yeah, ghost.
Yeah, without being able to explain it. So, because it's like not exciting. And I'm not exciting people around me either. But if I'm able to say, okay, I do need time to recharge. I do enjoy. I feel excited when I read a book. Because when I hear them say, I love being in my room reading a book, that's exciting too, but it feels like the opposite, like it shouldn't be, or I shouldn't enjoy this, but, or people kind of cannot make sense of them. So I will feel even more excited if I'm able to kind of own that desire to be by myself and recharge and not feel the need or the burden of energizing people around me.
So it feels selfish?
Yeah, it feels a bit selfish. Yeah. Like I'm not doing what people are expecting me to do as well. It's like be the energizer. Mm-hmm.
So what's a practical effort that seven can make?
I would do a very simple kind of practice that would be, and it's very similar to one actually, but it's like stating when they feel this need to go away, say, you know what? I need time by myself. I want to be on my own. So that people see that as their public identity. Tell them, I enjoy this. I want to be here, but now I need to go away. And people will understand that it's something, that it's part of the whole picture. I don't think anybody will think, oh, they're not exciting anymore, you know?
Right.
They don't have to be on stage all the time. They do need that. They enjoy that. So I would just make that shift in stating it so that it starts becoming part of my public identity. And people will respect that more, will understand that it's enjoying that as well, and find me even more exciting because it's not just me doing that and then disappearing.
It's cultivating a low stimulation environment.
Yeah.
And letting that be what it is that you need. Yeah.
Instead of having, like if the seven does disappear, when they come back, people might be inclined to say, what was wrong? Or were you okay? Mm-hmm. Or like, but to normalize, actually I actively want to go do yeah. this thing by myself and recharge, mm-hmm. there is nothing wrong on the front end, right?
Yeah. Great. Yeah, because I remember this friend who was telling me that he would need to go away for a couple of days to the mountains every so often. The wife just didn't understand what was going on. And it's like, is there something wrong with me, with the relationship? So explaining it, making sense of it, owning it might be more exciting for me and for people around me.
Great. All right, let's move on to Striving to Feel Powerful, type 8.
Shall we skip that one?
I don't think so.
No.
We might have to amend that later.
No. I really
is
like
it a whole
eight.
Episode to itself?
Yeah. No. Do it quickly. So eights yeah. wants to eights want to feel powerful, influence things, move things in the direction that I want them to move, and be in control. Because if I'm in control, there's a much higher chance that things are going to be done my way than if I'm not, if somebody else is in control. And the neglected strategy is at point two in striving to feel connected. And I think there's a misunderstanding around that. Yes, connecting makes an eight more vulnerable. But it's not like I'm going to be weak. It's on the one hand, I'm going to feel kind of less detached. I'm not going to be able to make tough decisions if I'm too connected. So that's one thing. But the other thing is that the more I connect with people, the more I put them kind of on my back and I feel responsible for them. Mm. And that's heavy. And that it's a lot of weight that I have to carry and might make me less powerful. Mm-hmm. It's not that intuitive to understand that eights feel very responsible for the people around them. And connecting with too many might be too much, and they might want to avoid that. But there's a part of them that wants to connect. And even more so, it's because one of the distortions as well is like, if I connect too much, I'm going to be dependent. I'm going to be tied up to these people in different ways. But there's a part of an eight, and with every eight that I talk, they have this desire to find someone or a few people who they can depend on, that can carry their own weight. I mean, their weight, the eight's weight, you know, that I can rely on and that you can carry me. That's kind of like a deep desire. And sometimes they find it, or they start testing you. Like, are you able to cope with me, to carry me? And they can be very demanding in that way. And so there's that part of them. And there's also the contradiction that gets created is I'm very assertive, so it's assertiveness versus neediness. And this neediness has to do with I need you to do what I say. I need you to be in my control. I need you to acknowledge my authority, you know. And so, but I can be seen as assertive and powerful, but I need you to make me feel powerful as well, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's the contradiction.
So it's like, it's instead of feeling like you have to be responsible, it's that connection helps build trust with individuals that then are able to support the independence and autonomy and that the eights are looking for.
Can you say that again?
No.
can I say that again?
Another way of saying that is that connecting is a form of building trust that then you are able to, like what you're saying, relying on the people that you're connecting with so that you don't have to carry them.
Yeah,
who to trust and who not to.
Yeah, I think you're right. And that's, I think, one way to integrate it is if I connect, I'd be able to empower you more effectively. Something like that. That's what I'm hearing. Mm-hmm. It's also this neediness from these people that I want to be carried by. And if I were integrating that need to connect more adaptively, I wouldn't need them, or I wouldn't expect or demand so much of them either. Mm. Now, again, asking someone to integrate that all the time completely is impossible. But you can do certain things. And for Anit, I think that, for example, at work, when you connect more, you can lead people not only by fear or only just imposing your authority, but you can be more inspiring. When you connect with people emotionally more, people will want to follow you. You will not need to force them to follow you. And I think that's...
It's loved rather than feared.
Yeah. That's one of the main ways in which you can integrate it. It's understand that what you're trying to avoid, because you feel like you feel less powerful if you connect with people. If you connect with people, you will be able to inspire them and have to make less effort to have them do what you want them to do. They will want to follow you.
I've heard Mario give an example here that I think on the podcast and in other spaces, but about picking like one person to be affirmatively nicer to, like on purpose. Like, I'm going to be nice to the Starbucks barista that works at this particular Starbucks when I go in there, right? Like, not just I'm going to be more friendly to everyone globally or whatever, but like a targeted, quick, and that's where I'm doing it. And then it sort of grows from there because that becomes habituated, and then it's...
That's
suddenly
why he's
it's all
so
the baristas.
Nice now. That's why he's so nice now.
Yes.
So with everybody.
Starbucks baristas far and wide.
I have an aide who calls me sometimes just to brag about how nice he's been, and like he wants me to be proud. He's like, aren't you proud of me? I've been really nice. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, good job doing basic human things.
but it builds on itself, right? Like, because...
Sure.
Once you're nicer a little bit, then that's safe.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't
mm-hmm.
have to be suddenly I'm going to, you know, crack my heart open and let everybody in.
Mm-hmm.
You
right.
That might be a steeper climb.
I've heard Aid say, okay, I connect with people. What if they start telling me all their emotional problems and things like that? What do we do with that? You know? Well, it doesn't have to be with everyone, but they will see that developing some tools around that will help them be more effective leaders.
And coming up maybe with a couple phrases like, that must be hard.
Yeah.
That's right? It.
That's all you need to say.
You don't need to fix then, people.
No, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Awesome.
That must be hard. It's a good one, Creek.
Yeah.
I think that wraps Aid up. Boom.
Yep.
Your practical practices. Practice saying, that must be hard, period. And now nines.
Yeah, and now nines.
Wow.
Yes, awesome.
Nines want to feel peaceful. And usually kind of being a bit self-deprecating and humble is part of their narrative of how to feel peaceful, because I will not step on anyone's toes. I will not... be arrogant. And arrogant, it's at 0.3. So if I want to feel outstanding, it feels like I'm seeking attention. It feels like I'm feeling, behaving in an arrogant way. And that's the least, I mean, what they really want to avoid. So they withhold, they kind of disappear in a way sometimes. Because, I mean, why should I talk if people already said that? Or why should I kind of brag about this. If I mean, I'm just doing it, which is the opposite of feeling outstanding. But there's a part of them that wants to be seen and gets really frustrated because when they're not considered. So the contradiction is self-sacrifice versus self-centeredness. So I want to sacrifice, I want to hold back so that I don't create any trouble. But then I do want to be seen. I do want to be paid attention to. I do want to be considered. And sometimes they manifest that in ways that are kind of, I don't want to say weird, but not that functional. So they ask for attention in an unskillful way, which takes people by surprise sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, or passive aggressive. So what nines can do is rewrite their narratives and say, because what happens is that I withhold, I kind of disappear, I don't ask for attention, I don't talk about my accomplishments, but I want those things to be seen. I want to be seen. So I get frustrated. And that doesn't feel peaceful at all inside. But they think that by avoiding doing those things, they will feel peaceful. But in the long term, they feel resentful, frustrated, angry, and that is not peaceful. So mm-hmm. I will feel even more peaceful if I draw a bit of attention to the things that I'm doing. If I, I wouldn't say draw attention to a nine, but I would say talk in meetings when you have something to say. Share your accomplishments. Share certain things. Or ask for what you need.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't, you'll feel this storm inside.
Mm-hmm.
And that feels nothing like peaceful. You'll feel more peaceful if you articulate what you want or what you think.
Thank Maria Jose.
Yes.
Thank you. It was fun. Do we need Mario back?
Yeah.
We do. He's coming back in the next episode.
We'll have to do more of this though, because I do enjoy I enjoy this dynamic and love hearing you kind of articulate things. Yeah, you articulate things differently than Mario, which just sheds more light on the thing. So I think it's really great. So,
and it's been great to have Lee with us.
Yeah. Oh yes, and Lee.
Thank you.
Always
thank
a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. It's been great being here.
Go ahead.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Awareness to Action Enneagram podcast. If you're interested in more information or talking to Mario, MJ, or myself, feel free to reach out to us through the links in the show notes or by emailing info@awarenesstoaction.com. All episode transcriptions and further information can be found at awarenesstoaction.com/podcast.